Jamal Ahmed with the Soul of Jazz on this Friday afternoon. And I'm very honored right now because I have someone who I've been a big fan of for many years on the phone line. And she's actually going to be here in the city of Atlanta come tomorrow evening over there at Spivey Hall on the campus of Clayton State University. And I'm talking about the legendary violinist who is also a MacArthur Fellow. We want to welcome to the Soul Line, Miss Regina Carter. Good afternoon, Regina.
How are you?
I'm great. Good to talk to you on this nippy Friday afternoon here in the city of Atlanta.
Yes, great to talk to you. I'm sure it's colder here in Jersey, but
yeah. Well,
it's winter.
Yeah, exactly. When we talk about the folk up north and juxtapose it to what we're dealing with down here, we don't have a lot to complain about. So.
Exactly. I was just in Michigan, and I got out just in time before they went back down to 25 below. So.
Oh, wow, wow. And, of course, you are from the Motor City, Detroit.
Yes, I am.
So you know a little bit about cold. Let's talk about growing up in Detroit, because when you talk about Detroit, I mean, it's a very rich city musically, from jazz to soul. To even techno, you know, there's been so many things that have come out of Detroit that have changed the world. How did growing up in Detroit affect you as a musician?
Well, Detroit was just a culturally rich city because Detroit and the surrounding suburbs, you had so many people that migrated to the United States from all over the world, and a lot of them ended up in Detroit because of the automotive industry. And then later because of Motown Records, which was started there. And had a huge jazz scene, European classical scene, the Art Institute, just all kinds of arts, theater, everything. And then you had the largest Chaldean population there, which are Christian Arabs. Mm. They had that music. Then you had all the other Europeans that were there, and you had their culture that they brought and their music. So you could be exposed to any and all types of cultures and music and art and food without having to even leave the city back then. So
right.
I felt like I got a lot of exposure, and because I was so young, I heard all these sounds, and they helped develop my voice on the violin, being exposed to all of this. So I'm really happy and blessed to have grown up there. I love my city. It's been going through a rough time,
mm-hmm.
but it's coming back. It's very slow, but it's coming back. But, you know, I may live anywhere else. I live in Jersey now, but Detroit will always be my home.
Right, right. Well, you know, you actually were part of a great group of musicians straight ahead. That was the first time I actually heard of you, and I just told you a story off on the phone about me discovering your music. How did you guys come together? I've never understood how all these wonderful people meet, you know, especially musicians. I know it's almost clandestine, but how did you meet all those wonderful folk in that band?
Well, the band originally was called Mickey Braden and Straight Ahead, and Mickey is a phenomenal vocalist out of Detroit, living in New York now. And it was an all-women's band. They purposely wanted that. And I believe they had saxophone. Their first instrumentalist, out front instrumentalist, was saxophone. And so then I think the group disbanded for a while. And I moved back to Detroit at a point, and they were still looking for saxophone, but then they said, let's try out violin. So they called me and asked if I wanted to be part of the group. And I said yes, and it was a great, we did all styles of music from, you know, very straight ahead, Betty Carter's Tight, and some of her other works, Carmen Lundy, Sounds of Blackness, Standards, we all wrote music. And it was a great, just a great group of women and great musicians, but also the wonderful thing about that band and being in Detroit, we would rehearse pretty much 4 to 5 times a week, you know. At the pianist's house. And so people don't really have time to do that now. With you know, you have to be so worried about making money, paying bills, and just running your business or running your life. It seems difficult to be able to do that. But that helped us all to really be able to hone our craft and work through things and come up with a sound that was a band sound.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, I look at your career because next year, you know, you'll be celebrating 20 years of being a solo artist. I think your first record came out, what, 1995? Solo album?
Yeah, 95, 96, somewhere in there.
yeah. That's a major feat. And especially recording jazz violin. Can I stay right there and just talk about you being a jazz violinist? And we know that's not the most common instrument in jazz. I mean, you can go back to folk like Stuff Smith and even move up to people like Michael White and those guys in the fusion era. But what made you want to play jazz on violin?
Well, you know, I grew up in Detroit. I started violin when I was four, and I was studying European classical music. And in high school, the lady sitting next to me, or the young girl sitting next to me then, her name was Carla Cook. And she's a phenomenal jazz vocalist out of Detroit. She lives here now on the East Coast as well. We're like sisters now, but she would come to school every day talking about Eddie Jefferson and Sarah Vaughan, Miles Davis, and I didn't know who any of these people were. And I was like, what are you talking about? So she brought in some records of Stefan Grappelli, violinist Stefan Grappelli, Noel Pointer, and Jean-Luc Bonti. And then someone turned me on to Travis Biggs, another violinist.
Right,
but
yeah.
I had these recordings, and I was totally blown away. I didn't know violin could do that. And, you know, have to play in front of a band or play with a band and have the freedom to improvise. And I felt an immediate connection. I wanted to be able to have my own voice in the music and not have to worry about playing it a specific way every single time with, you know, European concertos or pieces, violin pieces. So I started listening to these records and transcribing, learning them, and the bug hit me. I said, I want to play jazz. And not knowing, you know, they could have called it anything, but the fact that the freedom of the music and being able to have one's own voice, that's what I was attracted to.
And I mean, you've really carved your own niche on the instrument. I mean, when I hear a Regina Carter line, I know it's you. You know, that's a hard thing to do in music. But let's move up to your new record, because you've come out with so many brilliant releases. But you have a new record that's coming out in March, entitled
March
4th, and it's entitled Southern Comfort. It's your very first for the Sony Music Masterworks record label. And this record really speaks about something that we know a lot down here in the South. You know, a lot of our relatives up north came from here. And that's one of the biggest human migrations that happened in human history. In the 20th century. Talk about the premise of this record and how your grandfather is actually the impetus for this record.
Well, I never really concentrated on my father's side of the family. I knew much more about my mother's side, and probably a lot of that came from my being so close to her. She lived the longest, and she really had so much to do with my life. So I decided, you know, I want to check out my father's side of the family, and I saw an ad for Ancestry.com and signed up for it, and then started putting the pieces together, meeting other people, other family members, either they were related by blood or through marriage, people, you know, that I hadn't met before. Maybe I'd met them when I was younger and had been out of contact, and putting our trees together, sharing information, and it was really interesting to see, and I did the whole DNA test, and so in doing that, I thought, man, this. I knew my grandfather was a coal miner out of Alabama. He was born in Georgia, and then later moved to Alabama, and he and my grandmother have 14 children that they raised, my father and his twin being the oldest, and I thought this would be really interesting to listen to and see what music was happening during the time, you know, that he was a youngster and growing up and working as a coal miner, and, you know, seeing places where he would have to go in order to find work. And so I started with the Lomax collection, and then someone turned me on to the John Wirth III Foundation. I went to the Library of Congress. There was just so much music. And then through the music, I wanted to understand what historically was happening. So it was like my own home course, home, you know, independent study. It was just so interesting, and a lot of the field recordings were incredible. And I wanted to be able to share this music and share my story. And it's really just my personal journey, but through it I found such interesting music that I wanted to share it. So I had different musicians and that are friends of mine in the band as well. We all arranged some of these field recordings and came up with a collection of tunes on this next record, Southern Comfort.
Wow. So, I mean, you were literally like an ethnomusicologist as well as an artist on this record.
It felt like it, yeah. Even with the record, the prior record, Reverse Thread, there's no music without history, there's no history without music,
right.
Same for art, you know. And when you look at our history, any history of any country, continent, we have some beautiful history, but we have some history that's not so beautiful. But still, out of any of that comes some great music and great art. And sometimes there's music that we don't know about because it is attached to a period or of some ugliness that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of belaboring that point, I want us to celebrate the music and the art which came out of that, which is really beautiful, and it's all a part of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, when you listen to the music and you hear, because, you know, the South, Appalachia, all the people that came from Ireland, Scotland, the Native Americans, the slave, everyone, it was a hodgepodge of sound, which creates this Americana sound.
Right.
And so you listen and you hear how much we really all, the human race, we're all connected. Whether we want to be or not, you can see it in the art, you can hear it in the music.
Yeah. And you know, you hear people talk about they don't really dig fusion, but everything is pretty much a fusion when you break it down.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I want to talk to you about your visit. You're coming here, like I said, and if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with jazz violinist Regina Carter, and she's going to be in town tomorrow, January the 25th, over there at Spivey Hall on the campus of Clayton State University at 8 p.m. What can people expect from you live? I've never seen you live, and I always wanted to.
Oh, well, I hope you're coming tomorrow night.
Yeah.
We'll try and warm you up. I have my quartet coming in. I have pianist Xavier Davis, Alvester Garnett on drums, Jesse Murphy on upright bass, and myself. And I'm going back and kind of doing more of the straight-ahead repertoire that I used to do, but also doing some of the material from the Reverse Thread CD, some from I'll Be Seeing You. So it's a mixture of music from many CDs and some music that we haven't recorded as well, but I love these guys. I love playing with them, and it's been a while. I took this band out on tour. We were in Europe for about a month and then here in the United States for a couple of weeks, and it's just fun to go back and play that style of music. I love playing any kind of music, but and you'll get a little bit of all of it with this group, but you know, it'll be fun. That's what people can expect. We're going to be having fun.
Yes. And as always, I just want to encourage you to please continue to do what you do, because the world needs the love vibes from this music. And I have to say, I really appreciated that project you did with Joe Jackson, Mr. Stepping Out.
Yeah.
And that tribute to Duke Ellington. That was a wonderful project.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was a blast working with him and just the whole band. He had a great band. He had Adam Rogers. He had his Sue Hachopoulos, who's his original percussionist, and Allison Cornell, keyboardist, has worked with him for years. Jesse Murphy, in fact, who works with me, and Adam Rogers, who were both on this record, and drummer Nate Smith all contributed tunes to my new project, but they were in the band. So it was just a lot of fun to tour with them and to hear stories from Joe and to hear his arrangements of the Duke Ellington music. I was shocked because I didn't know he was a Duke fan, but
Who knew?
He's a great, brilliant writer and arranger. So
he is.
Respect to him.
He's one of my favorites in the '80s. His music has a certain thing in it that makes it a lot more sophisticated. than a lot of the things that came out in the 1980s. Well, again, we want to thank you so much, Regina Carter, for giving us a call today.
Thank you so much.
And again, her new album will be coming out on March the 4th, entitled Southern Comfort. And she'll be in town tomorrow night over there at Spivey Hall at 8 p.m. And it should be a great show. And, you know, we need the warmth down here.
Well, we need it up here, too. And I just wanted to mention there's a meet and greet for anyone that comes after the show tomorrow night. I know there's a lot of educators. It's Appreciate Educators Night.
Oh, wonderful.
The concert is dedicated to. So come on out. Make sure you stay behind and say hello. We'd love to meet everyone.